This is the Michael K. Show podcast. Listen live weekday afternoon starting at 3 on 98.7 ESPN in New York, the ESPN app, the TuneIn app, or on your smart speaker.
Hey, Alexa, play 98.7 ESPN.
Welcome to the show. Kalis, just one more day. Michael will be back tomorrow. So I am in my undisclosed location, which happens to be my home.
That's, and Peter, so it's not undisclosed.
His old home, the place he grew up.
That's right. Chevy Chase, Maryland, Don LaGreca, and tried to come with a little bit of a better setup today. I still need to work on the light a little bit, but listen, we're figuring this thing out. And unfortunately, and Don, this will play into some of our topics today, I think I wanted to come down here and check things out because, Don, we have no idea how long we're going to be gone from the studio. No idea. And so I think it's important to start thinking about what adjustments you may have to make if this becomes a really long-term situation.
Yeah, I think we're doing very well here in the tri-state area. New Jersey did pause in restaurant dining that was supposed to begin on Thursday just because Governor Murphy did the math on what's happening around the country, and apparently the homework was done that in areas where there has been a spike, it's been traced back to in-house dining. So
you mean indoor as opposed to patio dining?
Right, as opposed to patio, like actually physically going inside. And New Jersey was going to have Thursday be the day that you were going to be able to, at a limited capacity, eat indoors. And that's been now hit the pause button. At last check, Governor Cuomo was thinking about doing the same thing because the governors in the tri-state area have all been working together and trying to learn from one another, because I think a lot of the states around the country didn't learn from us, right? They didn't learn the lesson of how overwhelmed our health system was and all the things we had to do to get back on track. And they just played the game of, well, that's a New York problem. That's a New Jersey problem. That's a Connecticut problem. It's not our problem. And they're finding out now it's becoming their problem. Peter, I was watching the news last night. There are some hospitals in Arizona. They were showing footage that could have very easily been New York in March.
Yeah, yeah.
So that's how serious this is all over the place. And rather than be like them, not caring what was happening to us or not learning from us is probably the better way to put it, I think we need to learn from them and continue to stay the course and wear the mask and social distance. And if it means we got to hit the pause button, and I understand, I feel so bad watching the news. There was a woman who was a restaurant owner in Hoboken who was in tears because she thought Thursday they were going to allow people in because, yeah, it's nice that they've got some tables outside, but they can't near make the money they could if they were able to expand to have dining inside. So I understand from a business standpoint, from an economy standpoint, this is killer. But we just can't have happen what took place in March happen again. So we've got to learn what's happening around the country. And eventually they'll figure it out and we will get through this. But it's going to take some time. It's probably going to be way longer than we thought. I keep thinking back to March 13th, Peter. It was me, you, RJ, and Andrew. Michael was in Tampa. And we left and said goodbye in what should have been appropriate handshaking and at least hugging, because we didn't know when we'd see each other again, but like the social distance goodbye, not knowing when we'd see each other again. I never put a timetable in my head, but did I think on June 30th we'd be still here with not knowing when we'd be back, that Labor Day seems like the earliest possibility of going back in the studio being normal? So, you know, it could be 6-7 months before we can even see the light of day again.
Yeah, I really don't want to be doom and gloom. And like I said, this is kind of what leads us into the baseball conversation, because you have to start thinking about what's realistic and what's worthwhile. And particularly with Major League Baseball, where there is no bubble, Don, and you're talking about teams playing in their home stadiums, it just seems like the news I keep hearing, and of course, if you didn't hear the show yesterday, we had Buster only on, and we'll hear from Buster again at 5:30 today. We'll talk to him. But Buster did an interview elsewhere yesterday in which he said he thinks there's a 0% chance the baseball season concludes, and he thinks there's a 5% chance the baseball season begins. And Don, as we see names drop out, big names drop out. You know, I'm here in D.C. right now, two pillars of that championship team, Ryan Zimmerman and Joe Ross, both out.
Yeah.
Because they don't think it's a worthwhile risk. So you have to start having conversations about, is this restart worthwhile?
You know, and that's Diamond Notes on the Michael K. Show, and it's brought to you by Roslyn Savings Bank, a division of New York Community Bank. And I talked to somebody off the record, you know, who knows a lot of thinking about players and deals with a lot of players who feel like that even if they're committed now, how are they going to feel once we start back up again? Tomorrow, camps open. The start of spring training part two begins. And a lot of these protocols are going to kick in. And how many players are going to say, I don't want to do this for the next 3-4 months. I'm out. And the news is certainly going to be something that the players are going to pay attention to as well. Because as we just opened the show, the way the NBA and the NHL are doing it is like curbside pickup. Right? That's the way they're kind of doing their reopening. It's not the way of the world. It's not normal. You know, they're going to give us sports, but it's going to be done in a completely different way. It's going to be done in a hub. The players are going to be tested every single day. So when I go to the store, you know, I'm wearing a mask. And so I went to Best Buy today because I had to drop off a computer that's broken. And it was completely different than I normally would go to Best Buy to get the computer fixed, right? I mean, you're setting up an appointment, I got a mask, and I'm talking to somebody through plexiglass, and it's a completely different animal, but we were able to get the job done. That's the NBA and the NHL. Baseball is trying to go back to normal pretty much, right? They're trying to have the in-dining. They're trying to have where you don't have to wear a mask, right? I mean, they're trying to go back to almost normalcy. All right, they're not going to have crowds, and there's going to be certain protocols, but they're going to be playing in their home stadiums. They're going to be traveling. They're going to be staying in hotels, Peter, around the country. And some of those places are going to be in hotbeds. There's a team in Arizona. There's a couple of teams in Florida. There's a couple of teams in Texas. You know, so where the spikes are happening, there are baseball teams. And guess what? A month from now, when those states get back to somewhat normal, there may be other states that have a spike. So it's going to be a revolving door of problems that baseball is going to have to deal with that the NBA and the NHL aren't going to have to worry about. So I can understand Brian Windhorst being optimistic the NBA is going to finish, that Barry Melrose is optimistic that the NHL is going to finish. But Buster Olney, I mean, he's coming from a place of education, Peter. He's reading the tea leaves as a guy that knows players, knows protocol, knows the sport.
And as a guy who desperately wants the game to get started. It's his livelihood.
Right. And he's basically given no chance for it to even start. Never mind finish. And to accentuate that, that's Buster Olney here on Golic and Wingo. Players, are they concerned about the return?
My projections are based on what I'm hearing at the team level about how this is all playing out. You know, I've heard phrases like false hustle. You know, why are we doing this? This is crazy. And a lot of it, obviously, is because there's things going on that are completely outside of the control of Major League Baseball. You know, I wrote in a column the other day that for baseball to attempt to restart right now, it's like getting into a sailboat as you see the outer bands of a hurricane on the horizon.
I mean, that's no joke. Jeff Passan was on SportsCenter with SVP. How many players will opt out?
At this point, you know, there have been rumors. This player, his wife is pregnant. Maybe he's going to want to opt out. That player, he's been around. He's got his service time. He's got his money. Why would he want to come and play? I think when it's all said and done, though, there isn't going to be a huge stream of players who do end up opting out. You may have a guy or two per team maximum, and I think it's going to come down to the individual decisions. But in the end, you have to answer to your teammates. And that's a really difficult thing to answer when they say, hey, we're coming to play in the midst of all of this. We want to try and win a championship. Why aren't you here with us?
All right, that's all well and good for right now. Because I do think there's a lot of players, Peter. Obviously, Ian Desmond, one that's not going to go. Zimmerman's not going to go. Ross isn't going to go. And they have to answer to their teammates who are going to go. But the next level, Peter, is what I'm concerned about. Once you get started and players are together and they start going through all the protocols and they start to see how dangerous it might actually be while they're going through it, it's not going to be very difficult for all of them to look at each other and say, we shouldn't do this. And if one person feels that way because of what's happening during the season or during spring training, it'll be very easy for other players to maybe feel the same way.
And I'll tell you what, if people feel like in some way this championship is not valid, it's like a monster asterisk season, Don, doesn't that factor in even more?
Well, you can't tell me that there aren't players who are on the fence, that on the con side, the length of the season isn't in play. Like, well, it's not like we're going back to 162-game season. Do I really want to come back when many people are going to look at a championship won in this year as bogus? Now, we don't necessarily believe that it is, but all you need is that player to say, what am I doing this for? Like a pitcher could say, what am I doing this for? I'm going to get maybe 10 starts. You know, why am I going through this and traveling and gearing up for what? For a season that many people are going to look at and go, give me a break. You know, and I just think once you're in it, like how are those players going to feel? The one thing baseball does have going for it, Peter, they don't have a LeBron James. Like, that was the negative baseball. This could be the positive of baseball. They don't have a face of the sport. Like, when LeBron James doesn't want to play, that brings the NBA down, right?
Like, yep, 100%.
That's like, you know, if LeBron James isn't playing, then this championship is going to be bogus. This season is going to be bogus. I don't know if there's a player in baseball that can do that. I mean, as good as Mike Trout is, does anybody in New York care if Mike Trout decides not to play?
It's a local game. We talk about that all the time.
Right, it's a regional sport. So obviously the fans of the Angels will be disappointed. If Bryce Harper didn't play for the Philly fans would be disappointed. If Aaron Judge didn't play, the Yankee fans would be disappointed. But would the rest of the nation stop watching your
game? But I will say this, though, Dom, but if a handful of those guys, if you're talking around the league, a handful of top-tier, you know, perennial all-star players don't play, it does make that asterisk even bigger. Then you go from not only is it a shortened season, but it was a shortened season that was lacking the best players in the game.
Well, then you get the situation that you got, and I believe it was in 1942, when the St. Louis Browns, who were always considered historically the worst team in the history of baseball, all of a sudden turn around and win the World Series. Why? Because all the stars were in World War II. You know, and I'm a baseball fan that doesn't remember that, but I learned about that. Which, does that make that championship for the Browns bogus? I mean, some people's eyes it would be that if you had five or six of the top 10 players in baseball all not play, as much of a regional sport as baseball is, don't you think that kind of brings it down a little bit? Like, if the Rays win the championship because Giancarlo Stanton and Aaron Judge decided not to play, you can't tell me that would be like, oh, you know, not only did they win a championship at a 66-game season, Peter, they won a championship when their toughest competition lost two of its best players.
Right. And that all circles us back around to, at what point do you start to say, is this worth it? Or is it no longer worth it? And I mean,
I guess
ultimately that's up to the people who are seeing the bottom lines and who are spending and making the money. You know, we ultimately can just think about what appears worth it for us. But you start to get into a place where you're thinking 60-game season, we're going to be missing some key players. The numbers are going up. We're seeing spikes. We're seeing teams like the Texas Rangers, in which there's a COVID breakout within the organization.
Right.
You know, I wonder what the line would be, Don, where before you even get started, you go, you know what? Enough's enough. We're not going to bother. Right. And I'm saying that really, really hoping it doesn't happen, but I would understand if it did.
Well, here's my opinion on that. I think they continue to move forward. Like, even if it got to that point where, like, look who's playing. How bad would it be if you stopped, right? Like, I think baseball, once they commit to do it, unless it just becomes, you know, ridiculous from a health standpoint where people are getting sick and now you're really, you know, coming into question whether it makes any sense from a health standpoint to continue to play. But if it's just a situation where all their stars are gone, don't you kind of still have to march forward?
I don't know.
It's very difficult to kind of pull the plug because you're never going to get into a situation where all the players are gone. So what if you get a team that they are able to keep their stars and they're playing well? It's like, wait a minute, we got a chance to win here and now you're pulling the plug on us. I think they will try to finish the season. As bogus as it may turn out to be, as much as the fans may hate it and as much as there might be a big fat asterisk at the end of the championship, I think they move forward from as long as it's not a health issue. But if a bunch of players decided to back out, I think baseball will continue to march forward because I think they would look at it as just, really catastrophic if they just, with all the excitement that they've built into this, just pull the plug in the middle of the season. But they may have to. But if they don't have to, Peter, I think they try to march on. This is a sport that played during world wars. They had a World Series during the Spanish flu. If they can get by health-wise, I think they can live with some of the superstars walking away. That's, what do you think?
I think it depends when. If something bad happens, it depends when it happens. So my concern is, for example, Don, on their way to getting started, something really dramatic happens. So let's say they start camp in a couple days.
Tomorrow.
And next week sometime, or a week and a half from now, as they're getting ready to go, something major happens. You see, like, let's say, for example, God forbid, the entire Red Sox, you know, 90% of the Red Sox all get COVID. And then they go, we have 2 weeks to even find out whether this team can be ready. And we're going to have to retest all the players in 2 weeks right before to see if they're good to go. Something like that, where it really throws the whole thing into question. And if you haven't yet started, do you then back away?
No, don't get me wrong. If you had 90% of a team get COVID, that's a health issue. Now you have no choice but to shut down, because that would be dangerous. But what I'm saying is, if you had a bunch of players back out.
No, I don't think just players backing out, because
I think
they've
moved forward.
I agree. If it's simply a matter of players are kind of deciding it's getting closer and I'm not comfortable, I think they're pushing through.
Now,
but I think if something really unfortunate happens that's big news, and then a rash of players decide they're uncomfortable, that sequence of events could be enough.
Right, because, again, tomorrow, day one of spring training. If a week from now, 50% of the league says, I don't want to do this, then you shut down because you haven't started yet, really. But I think once the season begins and you start playing, I think baseball will try to finish what they started. The Michael Kay Show on 98.7 ESPN, brought to you by GEICO. The real value in car insurance isn't how much you save. It's also the kind of service you get. Good thing GEICO's been perfecting both for over 75 years. And, of course, this is Diamond Notes, brought to you by Roslyn's Savings Bank, a division of New York Community Bank, serving our community since 1859. Visit nycb.com for details. Let's get your reaction to all this at 1-800-919-3776. Griffin in Connecticut, you get us started off here on the Michael Kay Show. What's up?
Hey, guys. Nice to talk to you guys again.
Always nice to talk to you, Griff.
Thanks, Don. I have two things. The first thing is, I agree with you guys, because right now it's not safe to be there, because especially with Tampa and Miami down in Florida, I don't even want to go to Florida right now.
No way, Griffin. I feel you.
That's a tough one for the NBA to deal with. You're right. But again, these things are fluid. We saw what a difference a month could make even here in the tri-state area. They're not going to start their season right till like July 30th. I mean, we're still a month away. So maybe in a month's time, Florida starts to flatten the curve. They start to change. So I'm kind of holding out hope that maybe that gives them 30 days to kind of move in the right direction.
Yep.
That's
and
it, Griffin?
That's what you hope for. That's it? That's all you got?
My other point was... I was just wanting to let you guys know that because I was watching a soccer game, NWSL, Women's Professional Soccer League, this weekend, and they had a fake noise with fans like in attendance. It's weird, but it didn't seem that strange.
No, it ends up working more than you would expect, right? I think, in my experience, you think it's weird in principle, Don. But you know what's weirder? Not having the sound. As a TV viewer, you're used to, when you're watching a game, there's a certain sound that fills your house. That's what comes from the TV. You're not thinking about, when you're watching it, where that sound is coming from within the game. Mm-hmm. I have long felt that the way to go with all these sports is to pipe in sound. I didn't see the NWSL games this weekend. I don't know if Andrew's there, if he watched any, but I think that is the way to go.
Thanks for listening to the Michael Kay Show podcast.
Yeah.
Catch the show on demand whenever you want. Just subscribe to us wherever you get your podcasts.
Question before I go to the calls.
Sure.
You're talking about like pumping and crowd noise, and that accentuates the point that there's going to be no crowds when baseball, basketball, and hockey get started again, and possibly the NFL, which I would also be very, very concerned about, too.
The NFL?
Because camps are opening in a month, right? Camps are going to be opening around the same time that basketball and hockey are going to be trying to get started, too. And we're wondering if baseball is going to finish, so certainly he'll be questioned if he can even finish the month of July. You may be surprised by this question because you know my absolute disgust and hatred over the sport of golf. Yeah. But I have noticed, Peter, scores are way down. Now, some of the thought has been, well, it's now exclusively a television sport. Maybe some of these courses are making it easier so that you get much lower scores and keep people interested. But there's also a theory that the lack of a gallery has taken the pressure off of these golfers and have lowered the score.
Mm.
Which side do you come on? Is it the course or is it the lack of fans that have lowered these scores?
I would have to know what people normally shoot at these courses, you know, before you can really sort of estimate what it is. Because, you know, golf's a week to week. You could watch a tournament one weekend in which the winner finishes, 8 under.
Well, the consensus
and then the next week can be 23.
But the consensus seems to be scores are down, that the average is down, that you're seeing a lot of, like, really, like, low 60s.
Yeah, I mean, listen, I'm sure it's all possible. Less fanfare, less sort of distraction, less things to think about. They're just going out and playing around, right? Like, isn't this similar? Wouldn't you imagine when these guys play on their own with their buddies by themselves, they shoot ridiculously low scores?
I would think. If that's the case where you believe that there's less pressure because there's no gallery, then could you possibly see some really great performances in baseball based on the fact that there's nobody there? There's no pressure for the road team. Certainly the Astros are going to benefit because nobody's going to be booing them. But even like in hockey, I think sometimes the home crowd can be a detriment more so than a help. Like when they're on the power play, fans get restless because they're not shooting the puck. Like, so will that make a power play that's struggling feel like better because they're not going to hear their own fans get on them for not shooting the puck?
Or like, will it benefit a pitcher who maybe normally pressure gets to them and the crowd right. can get to them, but instead it's like they're playing just an amateur, you know, they're just playing a game for fun? That's a right. really interesting question.
Yeah, and so it's something to think about where we think so selfishly, right? Like, how is it going to affect our viewing pleasure? How is it going to affect the ambiance of the game? It might actually accentuate it. We might get some great performances because there'll be a lot less pressure of playing really to no fans. So why do we always think the negative? It might actually be a positive. Maybe it'll be easier to hit 400 in these 60 games than ever before because of the fact that there'll be no distraction. No hitters are kind of difficult now because nobody pitches complete games. But, you know, will we see possibly some individual, like, game records fall because there isn't the pressure of the moment of 30, 40, 50,000 people engaged in the game there live? 1-800-919-3776. Let's go to Craig. He's in Warren. You're on ESPN New York. What's up, Craig?
How you doing, guys? Good afternoon.
Craig.
I have a baseball-related question. You have some of these guys that seem to be a little reluctant to start when the season's supposed to start. Now, you get a month and a half into the season. Are these guys allowed to come back and play?
I would think so. I mean, if you can maneuver the roster spot, why not, Peter? I
mean, like a player in baseball, maybe a player starts out uncomfortable, and then after watching it go on for a month, talks to his teammates, and they're like, hey, dude, you know what? You're actually going to feel fine. And do some of those players change their mind and think, I'm missing out on something? That's a really interesting point.
But couldn't things get better, Peter?
Yeah, like, and that too.
We get to July 23rd, things aren't that great. Somebody decides, you know what? My wife's pregnant, this, that. Well, you know what? The wife gives birth to the baby. Everybody's healthy. Everybody's fine. A month goes by. COVID-19 kind of lessens a little bit. Maybe the curve gets flat, and you say, yeah, I'd like to come back in. There's no hub. So I would think if the team can make the necessary transaction, yeah, they would. Are you telling me Bryce Harper wants out just for sake of argument and decides I want to come back? They're going to say no, sorry. No, I would think he'd be allowed back. The hub is a little bit different because there'll be some protocols for you to be able to re-enter the hub. But if you get tested, you might have to maybe quarantine for a couple of weeks before you're allowed back in. But I would think in all these sports, Peter, why not?
It's a really interesting point to think about. And I wonder what provisions, what they'll have built in. But yeah, why not? Especially in baseball where it's an entire season. And after 20 games, they look up and like, wow, this actually looks like cool. And the players don't seem to be stressed out. Yeah. And the wife has the baby and everyone's feeling okay. It's a really good point, Don.
Yeah. I think it's something they already have the protocols in place. If you get COVID-19, what you would have to do to rejoin the team. So why not somebody who never had it, that didn't want to play, decides to change his mind? I mean, the baseball season's long. I mean, the hockey and the basketball, we're only talking like 6-7 weeks. And then when your team's eliminated, they're eliminated. So it's not quite as long. But baseball's going to be playing until the end of September. So you've got, you know, the end of July, and then you got all August, all of September. You got a couple of months to change your mind. A lot can happen in that period of time. Mitchell, Long Island, you're on ESPN New York.
Hey, guys, how you doing today? Thank you for taking my call.
Thanks, Mitch.
We appreciate it, man.
Don, big Ranger fan. Go back to the days of Boom Boom, Jeffrey Arn, Camille Henry, and those guys.
Love Boom Boom. I actually went to his number retirement in Montreal, and that was actually the day he died, which is crazy.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Oh, man. Well, that's something you're not going to forget.
No, it's unfortunate.
He won't either.
Boom Boom was actually in some of the light beer commercials back in the day, too.
I wonder if there's a drop out of Don saying, I love Boom Boom. I'm not sure, but go ahead. I'm sorry. Continue, Don.
That's okay, Peter. I love your comedy, man. Your act is really good.
Okay, I didn't realize he was a comedian, but good.
Hey, thank you.
You're welcome. I got a couple of comments. I called in back in April when it was really spiking here in New York on the COVID thing. Organized sports, I know that they're taking a big financial hit because of the virus. Okay, I understand it. But what happens if a week or two into the season, now the virus is traveling around the country and it's affecting the youth of the country these days, 25, what is it, 18 to 35 or something like that?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, now what happens if somebody gets sick and goes on a ventilator? I mean, what happens? This is a possibility.
Yeah.
Okay, also, they should just take the L, all the professional sports, all right? They're not going to be able, they're not controlling this thing, all right? They did a great job in the tri-state area, okay? Cuomo should be running this thing and do the whole thing for the country. We all be better off. But the way that this is affecting the whole, this thing is never going to end. It's going to keep spiking here, there, and especially in the states where they're holding these competitions.
Right. But here's the problem, Mitchell. I completely understand where you're coming from because it does seem like a tough thing to do when you consider what's happening around this country. And I can't even imagine what they're going through in some places like Arizona who thought they were okay, and now all of a sudden, you know, their hospitals are at capacity. And it's got to be scary. We went through it. You know, but I think it happened so fast to us, Peter. Like, I don't think there was ever a point when this started where we thought, oh, it won't happen to us, because it just all of a sudden did.
It did, right.
It went from, oh, they've canceled sports on March 12th to, like, the next day, it seemed. Like, that. Like we went through that weekend, and then, like, that Monday, the news just started pouring in like a tidal wave. But he just said it. It's going to continue to spike. We're hearing the best-case scenario. Fauci told us last week, best case scenario, he's optimistic that we could have a vaccine by early next year. How do you put sports on pause until January or February of 2021? Yeah, it's not just the players and the owners, Peter. Think of all the people that have been furloughed out of work because their sports aren't happening. I mean, if other areas are trying to get back, I think sports should try to get back as well. Our only question is baseball seems to be very aggressive with their comeback. But Peter, if the local restaurant, if the local store is trying to move forward, then shouldn't sports try to move forward?
Yeah, I
think you just arbitrarily say, all right, we're just going to wait until there's a vaccine. We'll see you next year. I don't know if you got the luxury to do that.
Yeah, I have no issue with sports trying to come back, especially at this point. No, that's not going to be the reason. The reason we have a setback because of as a country in terms of COVID-19, to me, is not going to come from businesses that are tactfully trying to plan a comeback. It's going to be because people cannot resist partying and drinking together inside without masks. To me, that is going to be, if we go completely all the way backwards, it will be because of that. It will not be because of businesses that are trying to plan and reopen. I don't think that's going to be the issue here.
I think responsibility is the word. If you are responsible, then I think you will be okay. Not 100%. But responsibility is the key word. And I guess the question is baseball doing it responsibly? That's the question I think we have right now, because that's what we're hinting at, right? Because we seem less concerned about the NBA and the NHL than we do about baseball. Why? Because we believe that those other sports are at least trying to be more responsible. The hub, to me, seems like the responsible thing to do. Having these guys travel around the country, staying in different hotels, being free to do what they want when they're outside the facility, to me, does not sound responsible.
No. Nope. It doesn't seem, it seems like the bubble's the only way to make it comfortable. And I understand why that was a difficult proposition for baseball. But my question is that the reason why? Like, was it logistically impossible because it's a full season?
Just didn't want to do it. The players would not vote to go to a bubble for that length of time. And I get it, right? The NBA and the NHL, they're going. They've got 8 regular season games they're going to play. So, right, there's already going to be teams that are only going to play 8. They're going to be there for like 10 days and go home.
Yep.
And then you're going to have the teams that are eliminated in the first round. So they'll play like another week, and then they'll go home. So you've got almost half the sport in the NBA and the NHL. They're going to spend like not even a month in the hub. They're going to go home. The only teams they're going to have to stay there for the full length of time are the teams that are going to be competing for a championship. Baseball, they would be in the hub from July 23rd until the end of September. All of them. Everybody. Because that's how long it would take to finish the regular season. That's a tough ask.
It's 2 months.
You know, that's a tough ask to go out there for, you know, 9 weeks when the other sports only have to commit to maybe 2 or 3 weeks at the most. They're going to have to commit to 9. And then the teams that make the playoffs could be there for another month. So I can understand it, but make no mistake, Peter, they wanted to do a hub. Ironically, their hubs were going to be in Florida and Arizona, which
exactly.
Also doesn't make you feel any better anyway.
No.
But I guess all of that could have very easily been changed. And I still think there's the possibility of going to a hub for the postseason. But for the regular season, you can understand somebody that's got a family who's like, I don't know. I don't know if I want to be away from my family for the better part of 10 weeks. That's a tough ask for anybody, even a millionaire Major League Baseball player.
Thanks for listening to the Michael K. Show podcast.
Well, that's awesome.
Looking for more access to the show? Check us out on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter at TMKS ESPN.
Hey, everybody. It's me. I'm back. And guess what? It's another Don segment.
We're doing the list, Michael. I don't care if you don't like it.
The Daily Don.
I'll fight to the death for this list.
It's the Daily Don Show. He makes lists.
Take it away, Donnie.
All right, I'm looking forward to this one because I know that Peter is going to be completely engaged. Because we've been thinking a lot alike over the last couple of days, which is important because he's been my partner here with No Michael.
I'm dialed in.
As you mentioned earlier, it is Mike Tyson's 54th birthday today. Happy birthday, Iron Mike. So why don't we do top 5 Tyson wins of his career?
Couldn't enjoy this anymore.
Really?
I think it's going to be hard.
I was so excited because we may argue because it's obviously in the eye of the beholder. I mean, not all of these were for championships. Just some of them just happened to be special for one way or another. But I narrowed down at least my favorite top 5 Tyson wins.
Well, let's we'll start out easy. Okay. And we will go Trevor Burbick.
Trevor Berbick is number two.
Catches him with a right left hook, and he goes down. He goes down. He should be able to get up from this. His legs may be shut. They are. As Trevor Berbick falls back in the rope, I don't know if he's going to be able to continue. He's got the heart, but his body won't let him do what his mind wants to. And he's counted out. It'll be scored as a knockout.
November 22nd, 1986, a TKO in the second round in Las Vegas as Tyson becomes the youngest heavyweight champion of all time. And one of the great memories of Tyson, Peter, just seeing Berbick basically take almost the entire ring to try to get his bearings and just never could get fully back as Tyson wins the fight in the second round.
I am guessing if you put Berbick at two, which you could argue is one, of course, because it's him winning the title, knowing the history and what this moment means to you, you reference it a lot. Culturally, nothing was bigger than that June day when Mike Tyson beat Michael Spinks.
And that, my friend, is number one.
And that is the first time Michael Spinks has ever been down in a professional fight.
And he's down again. And in serious trouble. A right hand right on the chin.
Six, seven, eight. He's not going to make it. It's all over.
June 22nd, 1988, a minute 31 seconds into the fight from Atlantic City, Mike Tyson, who had been trailed for so long by Spinks. Spinks moves up to be a heavyweight to fight him. And as you heard in the call, goes down for the first time in his career. And then shortly thereafter, for the second time in his career, not to get up as Mike Tyson wins by knockout. That's number one.
So this is where it gets interesting, in my opinion. Those two were the absolute gimmies because the sad part about Mike's career is there are so many ridiculous knockouts, but a lot of the biggest moments are, of course, losses, right? The two Holyfield fights are losses. The Lennox Lewis fight is a loss. I would argue, and there are a few that I want to throw out here, and we'll see what we get. But I would argue that when you think about the moment and what the moment meant, in spite of the fact that it was against an utter tomato can, Mike Tyson's victory after jail against Peter McNeely was an absolute monster win.
I didn't have it in there.
You didn't even think about it.
Well, because it was the tomato can factor that this made it difficult. When I was thinking about it in my head, I thought I got to go with something after, you know, he came back. You know, 4 years, that's a long time, right?
Did you end up going with any after he came back?
I did not.
Because then you could have done Frank Bruno 2.
Right, I could have done either of the two Frank Brunos, really.
So I
just felt that he was a tomato can, and that was the problem. It was significant. It's a good call.
So let's measure it
against the other three.
So then I'm guessing in terms, again, of cultural moments, even though, again, it was someone who was significantly over the hill, I'm guessing for what it meant to people, the Larry Holmes win could be there.
For Ali is number three.
15 seconds left. Tyson still has to be careful because Larry... Oh, that's shot. That's
huge
it.
Right hand.
That should be it.
Going to
be it. It's over. That's all.
I like Sugar Ray. Uh-oh. January 22nd, 1988, a knockout of Larry Holmes in Atlantic City in the fourth round ends up being number three.
Michael Kay loves to reference the Marvis Frazier fight. It wasn't actually that big a deal at the time, so I would assume that does not make your list. Am I wrong?
Yeah, you are. Because it was just so shocking.
Very young for it. It was a long time ago.
It was right. See, here's the thing. This is why it's biased. It was right in my wheelhouse of watching every Tyson fight with my dad, just wondering, would we actually see something go beyond the first round? So I have Marvis Frazier, July 26th, 1986, at number four.
Uppercut! Going to stop the fight. It did not last 20 seconds.
If you want to see what absolute brutality in a boxing ring is. I recommend you set aside 20 seconds and watch the Marvin. He's out while Mike is still swinging. And you can't even be mad at Mike. You wouldn't even know he's out. He's just, it's a barrage of punches.
You are so right. As a Tyson aficionado, I can understand you not having it in the top five because really at the end of the day, it wasn't overly significant in like historical meaning as far as going into the fight. But when I think of Tyson, I just think of the pure brutality of his early career. And this one, this encompasses all of that, right? So that's why I probably have it as high as I do.
And so I'll throw out a couple different ones here for five. There was a lot of trash talk and a lot of history in his relationship with Mitch Green, Mitch Blood Green.
I thought about that. I did, significantly, because that was... That went the distance. There was a lot going on there, but I thought another one was a little bit more significant at five.
Donovan Razor Ruddock.
No, just misses two.
Ah. Hector Mercedes. No, I'm just kidding. You said none were post jail, right?
Right.
Because, you know, there are a couple of knockouts that for anyone, the post-jail knockouts that'll really blow your mind. Francois Botha, who he just stopped with a straight right. Well, it looked like he blew up a Mack truck. I mean, it was just ridiculous. But again, Botha was a tomato can.
Let me give you a hint. Don't think knockout.
Think the distance. It's not a Bruno fight. It's not Mitch Green.
It unified a title.
Oh, James Bonecrusher Smith.
No.
Who was the other? So it was for the other title.
Right, it's the IBF champ.
Tony Tubbs?
Close.
God, Max Kellerman is disgusted with me right now.
Thank you for being such a gentleman.
It's close to Tubbs.
He's right, just in name.
He's a very scared man.
Tucker?
Tony Tucker, number five. All
right. It's over. Well, Tony Tucker talked the talk and walked the walk.
Yep, August 1st, 1987, unified the title. Tucker was an Olympic champion. Had never lost as a professional. He was undefeated as a pro and suffered his first loss at the hands of Mike Tyson. He went the distance. He had gone the distance two fights before, but this was the first time that he was really tested as a boxer. And Tony Tucker took him the distance, but won a unanimous decision on August 1st, 1987.
And you know, that is one thing that's underrated about Tyson's career. You know, people kind of forget that there were several times in which people stood up to him and Mike went the distance and won. You know, a lot of people even forget that you could argue that he should have won the Buster Douglas fight and another fight that was an absolute war and that he may have won, you know, depending if the count goes slightly differently, very deep into that fight. Even though he was completely overmatched physically for the shape he was in, he still was very game late. That in that first part of his career, pre-jail, he really did have a few fights where he went deep and showed a lot of heart. You think of all the knockouts, Dom, but I think it's good you included a couple where he goes the distance because I think it is something that's sort of underrated about Tyson as a fighter.
So I got his... win over Tony Tucker at 5, Marvis Frazier 4, Larry Holmes 3, Trevor Burbick 2, and Michael Spinks 1. I hope I did you proud as a Mike Tyson fan.
Thanks for listening to the Michael K. Show podcast.
Yeah.
Catch the show on demand whenever you want. Just subscribe to us wherever you get your podcasts. Today, two opponents enter.
I hate Don.
I'm Don LaGreca, sidekick to Michael K.
Only one makes it out.
Let's go with Don!
Who will win this deadly competition where the standings don't matter?
What?
We find out.
Okay.
In the latest edition of Last One Standing.
Ladies and gentlemen, it is time for Last One Standing. A very rare, a very special edition of Last One Standing. Why? Because Don LaGreca was beaten yesterday by a caller. However, today he has even more pressure. He's not only going up against another caller, but someone who could only be described as an amateur, a 16-year-old named Ryan. Ryan, welcome to Last One Standing.
Thanks for having me, guys.
Ryan, where are you from?
Everything going to Westfield, all right?
Yeah, you're from Westfield?
Yeah, Westfield High School in New Jersey.
And what year are you over there?
Entering junior year.
Okay, between sophomore and junior year. And what are your favorite teams in sports, Ryan?
So I could do Knicks, Nets, Yankees, Giants. So basketball is my main sport, and then baseball and football.
Okay. Basketball, baseball, football. Don LaGreca, are you ready?
I'm ready. And I believe the caller gets to go first today.
Oh, yes, the caller would get to go first if we're switching off. That's a good point. Yes. All right, you ready, Ryan?
Yes, I am.
All right. Without any further ado, it's time for this special amateur versus professional edition of Last One Standing. In the first round of the 2019 NBA playoffs, this player hit a 37-foot three-pointer as time expired to eliminate the Oklahoma City Thunder.
That would be Damian Lillard, final answer.
Good job.
And Don, you knew that too, didn't you?
Yes, that's my team.
We'll keep it easy here, Don. This 49er was the receiver of the catch in the 1981 NFC Championship game.
That would be Dwight Clark, final answer.
Also correct. Fantastic job out of you.
You knew that, Ryan, right?
I have to say I didn't.
Oh. So that's a little bit older, but yeah, that's a name to remember. In the 2017 Super Bowl between the Patriots and the Eagles, this player was on the receiving end of the Philly special on the fourth and goal at the end of the first half.
That would be Nick Foles, final answer.
Very good.
All right.
All right, Donald, you ready?
Yeah.
In 1991, Coach K and Duke won their first national championship, beating Kansas 72-65. Don, can you name three of Duke's starting five?
Christian Laettner, Grant Hill, with Danny Ferry?
Is that your final answer?
Yeah.
Oh. Well, this is hard. Do you know the answer, Ryan, by any chance?
I would have gotten the first two. I wouldn't know the third.
The third one is...
Ferry was earlier.
That's right. And the third one, Don, come on. This is a...
Oh. And it would be Bobby Hurley.
That would have been what we were looking for. Of course, we would have taken Greg Kubek, who no one would have remembered, or Thomas Hill, who you may have remembered. And for the second day in a row, Don has lost to a caller. A great job out of Ryan. Ryan, I had a couple more questions that were in your wheelhouse ready to go, but you didn't hesitate. You came through, and you dethroned Don LaGreca. You don't win anything, but do you want to give any shout-outs? I think you at least deserve that.
Got to shout-out my parents for everybody at Westfield High School.
Sure.
And, man, I got to say, I love the show. Really big fans.
Well, Ryan, thank you so much,
man.
Appreciate you sitting on hold for so long, and then you show up and just embarrass Don LaGreca like that. It's a great job.
He's a nice man.
Sorry about that, Don.
That's all right.
Appreciate you, Ryan. Thanks for calling, bud.
Ferry was earlier, right?
Yep. Ferry was, I think, finished in 89 or 90?
Yeah. So, listen, I'm not a big college basketball guy. I should have remembered Bobby Hurley. But
well, when you think Leitner and Hill, yeah, I would think you'd think Hurley. But, hey, listen, it's not your top sport. I thought it was in your wheelhouse. I thought it was enough that you could have gotten it.
Ferry was not that all. I mean, at least he played for Duke at some point.
Correct. You know? very near that time.
You know, I didn't throw out Shaq or something
That would have been much more embarrassing.
That's all right.
And tomorrow we'll have 2 days at least, Wednesday and Thursday, a rare just two-day week between – Michael and Don going head to head in Last One Standing.
Yeah, that should be fun. Get back.
You think Michael's still watching the show? Or you think we lost him? You think he checked in, critiqued what we were wearing?
No, I'm sure he's going to completely abuse me that I lost. But hey, it's all right.
Well, you're not like Michael. Michael feels very small about things like this.
I'm so disgusted. I'm such a loser.
See? Imagine having to live inside that head.
I'm proud of my answer.
Would you give it again?
Well, obviously not, because Bobby, I did know Bobby Hurley was on the team. I just don't know why he didn't spring to mind. But I,
and the local connection with the Hurley family.
No, there's no doubt.
It's a little harmful.
Well, you know,
it's a little hurtful.
Also, you get confused because when you watch Blue Chips, Bobby Hurley's playing for Indiana, which kind of throws everything off, right?
Of course. Most people, I know a lot of people get confused. It really confuses the entire Shaq, Penny, Bobby Hurley thing. It's really tough there.
That's right. Well, you know, because Western was a fictional school.
Right.
But Indiana was a real school that had a lot of guys that didn't go to Indiana on that team.
And you also think sometimes that Ray Allen is from Coney Island.
Yes.
Basketball movies are confusing. I understand.
They do confuse you. Let's go to Nick in New Jersey. You're on ESPN New York. What's up, Nick? What's up, Nick? Nick!
Hello?
All right, Nick. We move on to Mike.
What?
Up there in Lake George, New York. You're on ESPN New York. What's up, Mike?
Hi, guys. First-time caller. And just want to see if... Michael Kay and the other one will be on the radio for the Yankee games.
Michael has not been on the radio for a Yankee game for quite some time. John Sterling presumably will be on the radio call, and Michael will be on the TV call when they get started.
Yes.
Okay, that's where I was going. I really enjoy your show. It's a lot better than Mike and Mike.
Okay, thank you so much. I appreciate it.
But we love those guys. I mean, they haven't been together for a while either.
I think there was a lot of confusion with that call.
But but it's a legitimate call in the sense of, will everything sound the same?
There you go.
Michael will be doing the play-by-play for television. John Sterling and Susan Wallman on the radio side. I think
they're not going to travel, right?
They're not going to travel. All the logistics, I'm not 100% sure of how it's going to all go. I'm sure there's going to be a lot of games done off the monitor on the road. Whether they'll be doing games from Yankee Stadium or not, I don't know for sure. But the games will be available. And they're supposed to start. The opening day is the 23rd and 24th. So I guess not everybody's playing the 23rd.
Are they doing – how many spring training games is it, Don? Are they doing a handful?
Yeah, because I really don't know how that's all going to work, because we're only talking – it begins tomorrow, so they'll have 22 days, like about 3 weeks of the spring training. But I guess the Yankees and Mets will play, right?
I think teams can schedule three preseason games or spring, however you want to look at it. It's not really spring training anymore, but three exhibitions. So the reason I ask is because I'm guessing, you know, yes and the radio side, they'll both need – that time to kind of figure out what they're doing. Get comfortable.
No, you're absolutely right.
Thanks for listening to the Michael Kay Show podcast.
Well, that's awesome.
Looking for more access to the show? Check us out on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter at TMKS ESPN. Let's kick it old school and take it back. This is Straight Outta Chevy Chase, Maryland.
Ah. Beautiful. Straight out of Chevy Chase, Maryland, which interestingly fits in perfectly for my first ever story during quarantine.
It was a long time coming, by the way, Pete.
Thank you. I hope so. I've got a lot of interesting ones from about a range of people. And Chevy Chase, Maryland factors into this story because the youngest heavyweight champion of the world, Iron Mike Tyson, spent a lot of time in this area. In fact, he married his ex-wife, Monica Turner, and lived with her and had children here in Potomac, Maryland, very, very near here, about 15 minutes away from where I live. I grew up a big Tyson fan like everybody else, but my brother was a really huge fan. I think it was a mix of not just his performance in the ring, but the attitude, the sort of the way he was sort of synonymous with hip hop and rebellion culture, like the culture of youth. There was so much that made Tyson intriguing. Yeah. And then my parents, I think, had a little bit of a fascination because both of my parents are from upstate New York. And of course, most people know Tyson was trained in Catskill. So when I was little, I went to Catskill. I have
the Catskills.
The Catskills, if you will, but specifically the town is Catskill, New York.
Oh, I'm all right. There you go.
I believe you can Google it, but I believe I'm correct. It's the town of Catskill. And we have a picture of my brother and myself, me at 8 years old, in front of that sign that says, "Welcome to Catskill, New York, the home of Mike Tyson, the youngest heavyweight champion in the world." So fast forward, Don, to 2003 or so.
Okay.
Would be the first time that I ever saw Mike Tyson in the flesh. I was at this point in the throes of my obsession. Because if you know anything about me, Don, you know that from my obsession with wrestling to hip hop to Mike Tyson, I always enjoyed having a passion for a field that required some sort of defending, right? Like, I love when people challenge me on wrestling. I'm a proud wrestling fan. I love when people say, "You know, it's fake, right?"
Right.
So when I am really into my Tyson obsession, this is not a good time for him. This is the early 2000s. He's trying to find his career again. He was a little bit out of control. He got in the face tattoo, all that kind of stuff. And I'm in Bethesda, Maryland, at the movie theater that I always went to. I'm with my best friend in the world, Ben Pleasure. And I'm actually at the time wearing my Lennox Lewis Mike Tyson t-shirt. Okay, I'm wearing the fight shirt. And we're at a movie. And at this point, I was like such an obsessive. I'm on fightnews.com every day. I want to find out what he's doing. And I literally overhear someone say Mike Tyson as I'm leaving the movie theater. And I look over at the person who said Mike Tyson, because I'm that much of a lunatic. And I see them glaring. So I kind of follow their glare. And I see Mike Tyson walking into Pizzeria Uno with his family. So I run after him. We go right in. We walk right up to him. I just sort of like fumble through saying how much I love him. And I'm like, look down. I'm wearing the shirt like a psychopath. We exchange a couple of words. He was very friendly. And that was it. No picture. No nothing. Just couldn't even believe it. Okay. But this just propelled me more on my path to wanting to do something related to Mike Tyson. So I decided at that point, I was figuring out my way in radio. I was in between jobs and I was like, you know what? I'm going to work on a Mike Tyson documentary. This is before the documentary by James Toback ended up getting made. I said, I'm going to make a Tyson documentary. I wanted to get a camera. My friend Chauncey's mother, God rest her soul, Kathleen Maher, sent me a check, Don, for $500 and said, I know you want to do this. Go buy yourself a camera. My friend's mom.
Wow.
She just loved me and believed in me, and she sent me this money, and I went and bought this camera, which was in no way good enough to make a feature-length documentary from. But I bought the camera anyway, Don. And I started making phone calls and was like, I have to find a way to get to Mike Tyson. And on this journey, I talked to many interesting people. I have interviews that I've recorded on this little camera with Max Kellerman, you know, 15 years ago, now more than that, 17 years ago. I interviewed a lot of people who are around Tyson, and I got a great voicemail from Tony Kornheiser in which he called me back. Tell me this isn't the most Kornheiser thing you've ever heard, Don. He responds to my random phone call from a stranger. He responds to it. And the voicemail that he left me was, Peter, this is Tony Kornheiser. I got your message. Mike Tyson is the single most fascinating athlete I have ever covered. And no, I will not do an interview with you.
Okay.
So I just keep sort of plugging away. Mike Tyson is preparing for his fight against Danny Williams in Louisville. And I find out he's going to be working out at a gym in Phoenix. So somehow, Arizona. That's right, Arizona, Don. So somehow, I end up calling the gym. I get someone on the phone from the gym. I ask about getting into the gym to try to meet Tyson. They said the only way you know you're going to get to Tyson, he is working out here. You got to deal with Freddie Roach, Tyson's famed trainer at the time. Mm. Of course, most famous for the beautiful job he's done with Manny Pacquiao and many more. But he had a brief run with Mike Tyson. So me and my friend Al Green, real name, go out to fly to Las Vegas, rent a car, and drive to Phoenix. And we show up at the gym 6 a.m. on a Monday morning.
From Maryland.
We went from Maryland to Vegas, spent a night in Vegas, hung out.
Wow.
And then the next day drove to Phoenix. We get to the gym and wait outside, and Freddie Roach comes to the gym. And I just say, hey, Freddie, my name is Peter Rosenberg. I'm making a documentary about Mike Tyson. I would do anything. I'm just trying to interview him. He said, listen, I don't book press. I don't have anything to do with that. But if you want to hang out, Mike will be here in the afternoon. And, you know, if he wants to talk to you, he can talk to you. But you can hang out and I'll introduce you. If he wants to talk to you, he can. So we ended up hanging out at the gym. We interviewed a couple other people who came around. A guy he was sparring with who he's known for a very long time, all the way back to the Customato days. Another friend of his from the music industry who was there. We went to lunch with Freddie Roach, which, by the way, in retrospect, kind of became its own story. You know, just to get to sit and have a lunch hearing boxing stories from Freddie Roach was pretty amazing. And then finally in the afternoon, we're sitting in the gym, and the door, the entrance to the gym was like one of those almost like a garage door that opens up. And the door opens up, and you see the second you see his feet, no socks, you know this is Mike Tyson.
Right.
And he comes into the gym and starts his routine. And obviously, I'm not going to say anything. I'm not going to bother him. I'm not going to do anything. I'm going to just kind of wait, you know, until something seems appropriate. And at some point, you know, he's doing his jump rope. He's hitting the bag. He's kind of just walking around getting warmed up. And at some point, he walks by us, me and my friend Al, and Freddie says, hey, Mike, this kid over here wants to make a documentary about you. Mike doesn't really acknowledge it.
Okay.
He just sort of keeps doing his routine, working out a little bit more, blah, blah, blah. And I'm just kind of sitting there watching. And then, Don, of course, you have to understand, I'm a lifelong fan. I'm watching his workout.
Which
I'm
is
just
cool
sitting
in
the
itself.
Gym. Yeah. If nothing else happens.
Right.
I'm watching Mike. Now, listen, this isn't prime Mike Tyson, but you guys saw the videos of him right now at 53, 54 years old. This is him in his late 30s. I mean, he still can go. So we're watching him work out, and at some point, he starts walking up to me. And as he goes past me, he grabs a folding chair, lifts it up over his head, and goes, "You want to make a bleeping documentary about me? Is that what you want to do?" And I just sort of staring at him. Right. And I was like, I knew he was bluffing. I knew he was trying to see how I would react to him kind of playing the role of crazy that he was so accustomed to playing at that time. And I just didn't balk. I just kind of stood there. And he put the chair down and he was like, "All right, man, that sounds cool. That sounds cool." And just kind of struck up a conversation. Where are you from? What do you do? Why are you here? We ended up talking for like 45 minutes to an hour about all kinds of stuff. I mean, he could quickly realize that I wasn't the average fan and I had a lot of information. Mm-hmm. I was asking a lot of deep questions. He was fascinated because my grandfather's name is Julius Rosenberg. Okay? Julius Rosenberg was the famous communist sympathizer who was executed. And Customato was a big-time communist sympathizer. So he just found it very interesting that my grandparents were named the Rosenbergs and my grandfather happened to be named Julius Rosenberg, but of no relation. And he's fascinated with history. So we started talking about that. I asked him about his relationship with John F. Kennedy Jr., who he had been close with before he passed. Make a long story short, not that short. He invites me back the next day and says, you want to come hang out? You can come hang out again. So we came back the next day, did the whole thing again, hung out, talked to him more, got to know him more. And the question is, did I get the interview? No, absolutely not. He did not do an interview with me. They were not going to give me a documentary interview with my little handy cam.
Right.
But what it was the beginning of getting to know this guy. And then as the years went on and I made it to Hot 97, he started coming up for interviews and I would talk to him more and more. And then when it came around time to do a podcast, his wife Kiki was like, Peter, you should host this podcast. And so then I got to do, I've sat with him now, I don't know, 25 times, whatever it may be. And instead, I never got to get the documentary made. But instead, I have hours and hours and hours of interviews that I've done with Mike over the years. He's been nothing but charming, gracious, and awesome to me in the time that I've known him. And that is the story of my relationship with Iron Mike Tyson.
What happened to the camera?
I have tons of tapes, Don. I don't know. The camera itself is around somewhere. It doesn't work.
Right.
But I have a VCR. I have a little miniature VCR for it because it's the mini tapes. And I do want to find like a film student at some point who's looking to do a project and hand them all my tapes to make the documentary, even though it would look super bootleg. There's a ton of great footage that I have. And of course, now I could get probably the sit down with Mike to finish the to finish the doc.
Listen, you can almost do a documentary on you trying to make the documentary.
I know.
You have a big enough name now where that I find that fascinating because all life is about taking chances, right? And you probably didn't think you had a snowball's chance of getting anything done, but you had the perseverance to at least forge a relationship with him. You might not have gotten a documentary done, but that's the gumption that it takes to be able to make it in this business. People aren't going to hand stuff to you. You got to try. Just the idea that you drove from Maryland to
Oh, no, we didn't drive, Don. I flew to Vegas, drove to Phoenix.
You retell the story.
I drove. Good point. It's a really good point.
And the car broke down. The car was actually on fire. Outside there's a scene where you're going to walk to the gym with the smoldering car in the background.
And we don't actually know where the gym is or where Mike Tyson's training. We run into a guy who goes, I heard he's training in Phoenix.
Right. Let me make this movie because I'm going to take a poetic license.
But I do think you make a really good point, not to make me a hero out of it. But I will say that is one of several things that I was on a quest to do. And though it didn't turn out, I didn't end up making the film. Can I be honest with you, Don? The dream wasn't really to make the film. It was my strange obsession with Tyson and getting to know him. I always believed that there was more to him than the story that had been portrayed, and I wanted to find out myself. That was the theme of the documentary, of which I made a trailer, and I wanted to find out. I never made the documentary, but I did find out that my hunch was correct. And I think now we're seeing publicly the rest of the world kind of see that there was a lot more to Tyson than met the eye.
Thanks for listening to the Michael K. Show podcast. Hear more of Michael, Don, and Peter live weekday afternoon starting at 3 on 98.7 ESPN in New York, the ESPN app, the TuneIn app, or on your smart speaker.
Hey, Alexa, play 98.7 ESPN.